ghostly greetings, my fellow mortals, and welcome to another episode of Pop That Corn. This week's episode is especially spooky because I will not be your host, but rather your ghost host. Oh man, I'm having way too much fun with this, especially in making that intro. I am so proud of that, and I really hope you guys liked it. I've been really looking forward to this because this week is Halloween, and it is on a Saturday this year, which is really great, other than the fact that there's a pandemic going on. But whatever you're doing, I hope you're doing it safe and responsibly, and, you know, not putting you or yourself, or you yourself, or anyone at risk. But we do have to make the best of it, which means we can watch movies and we can wear all of our Halloween costumes in the house. Maybe we can do a costume party with your family and all surprise each other. You can do costume photos, you know, like a photo shoot, decorate like crazy. Or you can do what I'm doing, which is wearing my fuzzy socks that have little ghosts on them, which are striped, not the ghosts, but the socks are striped black and orange, with little white fuzzy sock ghosts. I have a sweatshirt that says serial killer documentaries and chill, and I have my ghostly little lights on in my room to really bring in the ambiance of Halloween. And of course, there's always the option of watching your favorite Halloween movies. Speaking of favorite Halloween movies, this week's episode, I really did some thinking because I wanted to do a Halloween episode. I didn't know if I wanted to go cliche. A couple of movies were in my head, but I finally just thought, you know, I gotta give the people what they want, and I'm sure what they want is an episode about Hocus Pocus. And honestly, what better time of year than to do it now? So here we go. This week, we're going to be talking about a classic film, Hocus Pocus. Now, before we start, I do want to give a small disclaimer that this episode is not going to be like my usual episodes. Hocus Pocus is a Disney movie, and part of my reason for wanting to not cover too many Disney movies is because, you know, the details in the movies aren't, they're Disney. It's like kind of predictable, relatively predictable. Very basic, brother's a jerk, at the end brother's not a jerk, and I don't want to spend time going scene by scene like that. What I want to do instead, especially because it's a spooky episode, is talk more about the movie from a factual standpoint and from a theoretical standpoint. So we're going to break down some facts that I know, like a bunch of pop facts are going to be in this episode. We're going to talk about some theories, a new theory specifically that I really, really like, and we're going to talk about how the movie might play into that. We're also going to discuss some innuendos that this movie presented, which is definitely different, and some edgy details from a Disney movie. So it isn't going to be a usual episode, but this is an unusual week because of Halloween anyways, so I hope you guys like it and enjoy. Hocus Pocus came out in 1993. It is an hour and 36 minutes and was directed by Disney favorites and legend Kenny Ortega. I actually didn't know this until I started like researching the movie. I guess I never really paid attention to that before, but I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Kenny Ortega only produces absolute classics. So, yeah, and then let's see, the Rotten Tomatoes was a 38%. Like I said, and will continue to say, I do not trust Rotten Tomatoes. Even if they agree with me, like, I still wouldn't be like, well, Rotten Tomatoes gave it a blah, 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 because normally it does crap like this, and I'm like, hey, Hocus Pocus, way better than a 38%, but whatever. The budget for this movie was $28 million, and the box office was $42.6 million, so it almost doubled. And let's see, it stars freaking amazing people like Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, Kathy Najimy, Thora Birch, Vanessa Shaw, Omri Kutz, and Sean Murray, aka McGee from NCIS. And I didn't even realize that until several years ago, but I had, you know, got into NCIS pretty heavily when I was like 10 or so, and I had no idea that that was him until I was a little older and rewatched it, and I was like, hold up, is that McGee? And sure enough, it is. It also has Jason Marsden, who plays Binks. So instead of it being Sean Murray's voice, it's actually Jason Marsden's voice when he's in cat form. We are going to now jump right into our first pop fact, which is about Sarah Jessica Parker. As I was researching this movie and trying to find out as many interesting things as I could, because I knew I didn't want to approach this episode in a normal sense, I wanted to really just hit you guys with some very interesting facts and, you know, kind of details of the movie rather than a breakdown. The first one I found that I felt was really cool is that Sarah Jessica Parker was on an episode of Who Do You Think You Are, which is a TV show that takes, I'm pretty sure it's mainly celebrities, and shows them their ancestry and takes them through and they learn about it. So Sarah Jessica Parker found out while being on that show that she is related to Esther Elwell, who is a woman that was accused of being a witch in the Salem witch trials. So lo and behold, here she is playing this a super iconic witch, and she's actually related to one. So the thing, you know, the more you know. And right in, just rolling right on into pop fact number two for you guys, the makeup artist, special effects makeup guy, his name is Tony Gardner. He built a rig inside of Doug Jones's mouth. Now, Doug Jones plays Billy Butcherson, the zombie brought back to life, Winnie's ex-lover. And he built a rig inside the actor's mouth to house actual alive moths so that he could cough them up on command. Can we just let that sink in? This person had moths in his mouth. He had actual moths flying around in this little rig inside his mouth so that he could cough up real live moths. That's disgusting. I didn't even realize that that was possible. Like the lengths that people go to make something so realistic, and just these small details that I would have never thought that. And that is, it's so gross to me. So I will be keeping one thing normal for this episode, which is that I will be providing a small summary of the movie to place us in the mindset of Hocus Pocus. Once again, thank you to Google for providing me for such a wonderful summary. Here we go. After moving to Salem, teenager Max Dennison explores an abandoned house with his sister Danny and their new friend Allison. After dismissing a story Allison tells as superstitious, Max accidentally frees a coven of evil witches who used to live in the house. Now, with the help of a magical cat, the kids must steal the witch's book of spells to stop them from becoming immortal. I hope you have all gotten into the Hocus Pocus mindset with me and pushed yourself back into the mystical, magical world that is Salem, Massachusetts, because we're ready to dive on in. The movie opens up with Hocus Pocus, which looks to be a book title. It's like, looks like it's on a bedtime story. Cover, which would make sense because here's another pop fact for you. Dun da da da. The book or the movie was actually originally created as a bedtime story and was pitched using puppets, which is probably part of the appeal. Wow, probably part of the appeal. Say that 10 times fast. When hearing the pitch, because you know, there's so many ways that you can pitch a movie and make it interesting that someone hasn't heard before, but for it to be a bedtime story transferred into puppets as the pitch, that seems like it would have been relatively effective, which it was. Even though originally the movie was a big flop, over the years it's been taken in by all the Halloween lovers as just this big, like, staple of Halloween, and there's merch every year, and I was actually reading about how every year there's like a spike in sales of the movie itself all around Halloween time. And honestly, I'm so glad that this movie got brought in as one of those classic Halloween movies because it so deserves it. Well, the bedtime story has begun and Hocus Pocus has started. We meet Emily and Thackeray and the Sanderson sisters themselves, who are Winifred, Sarah, and Mary. Now, let's take a moment to break down the different personalities of each sister. So we're going to start with the top dog herself, Winnie. Now, Winnie is, I would classify, an A-type kind of personality. She has a plan. She has a means to get that plan. And she has no second thoughts about telling people what to do. She can be cruel, she's very smart, and pretty sarcastic. She runs that coven like no other, and believes she is sistered to a bunch of idiots, which is shown to be true, unfortunately. When I was little, I wanted to be ever so much Sarah Sanderson, who we will get to in a second. However, as I have grown, and as my friends and family will tell you, I'm sure, I am Winifred Sanderson all the frickin' way. I am A-type. I am known to be bossy. Now it's on record of my saying that. So I'll never live it down. I have a plan. And I am sarcastic. So, you know, I also love to sing. And I think I can rock the hell out of I Put a Spell on You. So it's fitting. And I accept it. And I love it. Now on to Sarah Sanderson, who is very promiscuous. Hello, cleavage throughout the entire movie. Which, don't get me wrong, I find nothing wrong with that. Just, once again, as a Disney movie, it is a little shocking. How far you can see down her shirt in a lot of scenes is. She is a little vain, could be considered crazy. She is clever to an extent at times, extremely flirtatious. She loves to play with people, specifically children and specifically little boys and or older men. The older men I can get behind, the younger boys is once again questionable. She just says that she likes to play with them, which can be either torture or inappropriate relations. It's a little hard to distinguish. She's also hopelessly romantic. She's silly. She is submissive to her older sister, Winnie, and I think really looks up to her. She's also pretty ditzy, but she's fun and she's sweet. And it is definitely a character that I was like, oh, I want to be just like her, probably because she is the prettier of the sisters, and back then that was all I cared about. Now I realize, no, it's okay to be Winnie. I just have to accept. This whole section here is really just to convince myself it's okay to be Winnie. The last sister that we have is Mary Sanderson. Now, Mary Sanderson is so sweet and supportive of both of her sisters. Anything Winnie says, she does it. Anything Winnie needs, she does it. I mean, she even fans her when Winnie's being all dramatic about almost dying. She is helpful. And honestly, Mary, I would be honored to have Mary as a sister and as a friend, because she's just so loyal and so sweet. Total sweetheart. She is not as dumb as Sarah, but a little dumb. And she's funny. And she loves to give out compliments. A little worrisome, but I mean, who isn't? Considered obnoxious, but I don't think she is. And honestly, funny. Like, the whole movie, she is packing them comedic punches and really serves the most comedic looks. Kathy Najimy really just brought it all the way to home with how well she played Mary. It's just, she's not supposed to be a main character, but man, she is presented like she thinks she's a main character, and that's so great. That's one of the reasons I like the Sanderson sisters, is because, yes, Winnie is top tier, yes, then it would be Mary, and then it would be Sarah, because she's more the ditzy one. But really, like, if you really think about it, each of them on their own can be their own main character, and that is all that matters. I would like to hear which Sanderson sister you guys think you are. We've established who I am, and go ahead and tweet me or at me on Instagram or on our Facebook page that I just started. It is Pop That Corn Podcast on Facebook, or if you want to join the private group, which is Pop That Corn. I believe it's linked on the Facebook page. Oh, and at Twitter, it's Pop That Corn Pod, and at Instagram, it's Pop That Corn Podcast. Go ahead and let me know which Sanderson sister you think that you are. Or if you're not a Sanderson sister, which Hocus Pocus character do you think they are? Because I know I'm focusing on the witches because it's Halloween, but Thackeray and Danny and Max and Allison and, I mean, even Billy, they all have their own wonderful personalities and traits, and just go ahead and let me know which character you think you are and why. We are now about halfway through this episode, and it's time to transition into the theory that I've been wanting to talk to you guys about ever since I read it. We're going to be talking about how Allison might be a witch. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail, but I just had that whole scene pop in my head where they're trying to figure out if the girl's a witch, and it's all, how do you know she's a witch? Well, she looks like one. Please, if you haven't seen that, go watch it. Monty Python and the Holy Grail, she's a witch scene. Have a good laugh. So getting into why I think she's a witch, we're going to start from the beginning, which is she is seen talking to Max after he ever so smoothly gave her his phone number, and she walks away, but she puts up her cardigan hood that she's wearing. Now, cardigans come with hoods. That's normal. It is a red cardigan, which is pretty bright, a little standout-ish for her character specifically. However, if you notice that when she puts the hood on, it distinctly matches the same kind of hood that the Sanderson sisters have on their cloaks. Now, you can call me crazy and call it coincidence, because it is just the first indication I've seen, but I would say it's a pretty big coincidence. Costume designers don't just come in and throw something on you. They pretty much plan everything. So for them to pick out a red cardigan that has the same kind of hood as a witch does, I mean, yeah, she could just be really obsessed with witches and Halloween, which she is, or as we will see, it could be an indication that she is a witch. Because also, coupling with that, the fact that she was the first person to really jump in and defend Halloween and then go into how it's originally All Hallows Eve, it shows that she knows about the holiday itself, so possibly because she celebrates the holiday. Just, you know, throwing that out there for you. The next point that really stuck out to me when reading these theories that I found online about Allison being a witch is that her parents every year throw a party on Halloween. Now, Halloween parties aren't an unfamiliar topic or idea or event, but this one's different because when Max and Danny show up to the house, not knowing that it's her house, it looks pretty dark on the outside. Doesn't look really lively or anything, but when you walk inside, everything is bright and everyone is in costumes that all match the same time period. Kind of looks like the French Pavilion threw up on it. Everyone's got Marie Antoinette hairdos with their painted faces and their makeup and their dresses and their suits. I don't know what you call, what the exact word for what the men wore back then, but they are all dressed being the same time zone, the same era, and they're all having this party, and she walks down, Allison does. She's not in a wig, she's not in the crazy makeup, she is in a dress, possibly indicating that she is still alive so she doesn't wear what the dead wear. I don't know, I'm thinking, you know, the party that her parents throw every year might just be a summoning party, and they could bring people back from the dead for one night to hang out. Because the other thing is, while they're there, no one even acknowledges that Max and Danny are there. No one talks to them, no one introduces themselves, her parents don't come up, everyone just continues partying. Allison grabs punch from someone, and you know, we can see that there's other people. But I think those other people might just be ghosts. Another indication that we see during this scene is when Allison talks about how her family actually used to own the museum and she can get them in because of that. So why would they make such a distinct connection between her family and the Sanderson house if there wasn't some kind of other witchy connection? Like, it just so happens that her family used to own it? No, her family probably owned it because they are witches who, maybe they're white witches and good witches and the Sanderson sisters are bad witches, and they wanted to like preserve it and be the ones who watched over it to make sure they never came back. I'm just saying. Some people might argue that she's not a witch because it's said that graveyards are only are hollow ground, and witches actually can't walk on graveyards. But I think that, at least from what I've seen in other witchy kind of movies or media, TV shows included and stuff like that, there's a difference between white witches and evil witches and what they can and can't do. So it could be possible that evil witches can't step foot in a graveyard because they'll do things to ruin the dead or use the dead for their evil plans, as however a white witch or a good witch would honor them or respect them and, you know, has good intentions, and so they might be allowed on a graveyard. So yes, she does walk on a graveyard, even though witches aren't supposed to be able to. However, it could be that only evil witches aren't supposed to be able to, and they didn't want to outwardly say that she was a witch, so they kept it a little vague. Later on, when they have supposedly defeated the witches, she, Allison, says that she still feels like something isn't right. So, could be her witchy instincts kicking in when they're back at the house, and Binks is asleep and they're trying to figure out a way that they could help him. She says, why don't we read the book? So she is clearly drawn to the book. Even though Binks has told them not to open the book, there's something in her that wants to see it, which could just be the curiosity of a young witch causing her to be drawn to this book. It could also be something, you know, where when you turn a certain age, you decide if you're a good witch or a bad witch, and the evilness of the book is making her, you know, want to read it and see what being a bad witch is about. And she is also the one who finds out that salt protects you from witches and zombies and things like that, and implements this. So she's practicing witchcraft, quote unquote, whatever. I mean, it's like the smallest of small, but she still does it. She takes the salt and draws a circle around everything. She uses it to fight them. And Winifred actually says, what a clever little white witch. So it is possible for there to be white witches. She says so herself. Therefore, she could just be an aspiring white witch. And as she says, also, she's really into witches because she wants to be one and figure out everything there is about being one. Some theories go even as far as to say that she was pulling the strings the whole time. So her family is heavily connected to the Sanderson sisters through the house and the museum. Why? Possibly because 300 years before that, when the Sanderson sisters swore they would come back, they probably chose the family in Salem who was well established, who was also aware of the supernatural witchy world, to watch over the house. And it was passed down, and so was the knowledge, and there you go. So they've passed down their craft for 300 years, each new family protecting the Sanderson sisters from returning. She is eager to break the curse, to get rid of the sisters once and for all, and she is hand-delivered a sly, cocky little virgin who can light the black flame candle so that she can finally get rid of the sisters. Because the whole time, I mean, I know that the whole point is to get rid of the sisters and that's what they're doing, but she's the one who's really working hard at it. I mean, she discovers the salt, she reads the book, she uses the salt, she also has the idea of burning them. She also is the one to figure out that they only have until sunrise. You know, she's very actively determined, a little more than the rest of them, or at least better at it, to figure out all about the Sanderson sisters and how to stop them. I'm just saying that this fan theory is definitely a new way to look at the movie after 30 years. It's just something interesting, something you can think about and read about, and honestly just caught my attention. So it is up to you to decide if you believe she is or is not a witch. Let me know. Let me know if you think she is or she isn't, and I want to know why as well, as I have presented facts for and against the claim. I would like you to do the same. It's only fair. I look forward to hearing what you guys say. Now that we've taken the time to discuss some of the personality traits of each Sanderson sister, talk about one of my new favorite theories of the movie, now I want to actually take a moment to do something a little different, which is to talk about the plot holes that exist in the movie, as well as discussing some of the rather crude innuendos that happen in this movie, especially for a Disney film. They're a little shocking. The first plot hole we're going to talk about is when the sisters are brought into the new world. It's been 300 years and they have no knowledge of anything that's happening. When they're going to chase after Max and Alice and Danny and Binks, they see a black river, which is just asphalt. They have no idea what it is. They don't know if they could touch it. They push Sarah Sanderson into the black river, and it turns out to just be asphalt. And they learn, oh, it's just a road. They go and they see a bus, and they don't really know what a bus is or what it's supposed to do. But yet somehow later on in the film, when they're chasing down the kids on the way to the cemetery and they're on their broomsticks, Winifred comes past Max's window on the driver's side and says, can I see your driver's permit? And then says, you know, we can get you for resisting arrest. How does she know what a driver's permit is or what the charge of resisting arrest is if it's been 300 years since she was last alive? Plot hole. The second plot hole is going along their knowledge of the new world. When Winifred makes a comment that something smells like Scrode, Scrode is lovely with some breadcrumbs and margarine. Margarine wasn't invented until the 19th century, which is way longer than the last time they were alive. So how would she know what margarine is? And in the same, well, similar to that scene, how does she know what the song I Put a Spell on You is? She doesn't know that song. She doesn't know those lyrics. That was so long ago. Not disputing the fact that it's a great song and that she freaking nails it. But just interesting how, you know, I feel like the times have changed in their details of the movies, where before they would allow certain things to go past, or they would just make a joke and not check if that was timely, correct time-wise, the correct timeline, sorry. And then, you know, they would just let it slip. But if you look back at it, there's actually a couple of plot holes that really don't make sense. Like the same thing with Binks. Binks can talk. But when he first is turned into a cat, he tries to get his father's attention by meowing at him, and you hear him meow, and then his dad just says, go away, beast, and he's never able to tell his parents who he is or what happened, but 300 years later, he can talk. Now, maybe that's a skill he developed, maybe he had to figure out how to talk or how to use English, but it just seems a little interesting that he wouldn't be able to just tell his parents, hey, it's me, 300 years earlier, because I feel like that would have definitely made a better, like, a more relieved storyline for him, not being able to tell his parents and their kids just disappearing. I mean, that's horrible, and he could have talked to them the whole time. So that was just interesting too. So those are a couple plot holes I found while I was looking into the movie that I wanted to just let you guys know. If you guys noticed them, if there's any I missed that you guys want to tell me about too, I would love to hear them. I love kind of seeing those in different movies, plot holes specifically, and it's just fun to, you know, critique things. And since I love doing it so much, we're gonna continue. The next couple of things are innuendos that Disney, I don't know if they overlooked or purposefully left, because, you know, some things have been known to be a little suggestive on purpose. And some relatively violent scenes or displays that happened in the movie. So the first that we're going to talk about is the beginning where they have a public hanging of three witches. Now, I know that in Tarzan, when Clayton dies, he falls off a cliff, and in the shadows in the background, you can see a man hanging, which is supposed to be Clayton now breaking his neck, falling on a vine and hanging, which is definitely dark for a Disney movie. Especially the way that they don't totally show you it. They kind of just make it creepy with the lightning strike and the shadow and all that. However, with Hocus Pocus, they just line up three chicks and hang them right then and there. Like, wow. And then they continue with things like this when it comes to later on in the movie when they're going to be lit on fire in a, what is it, a furnace. And Allison has the idea to put them in there and burn them and, you know, burn the witches, burn, like they did in Salem, right? Well, they are in Salem, but back in the old Salem. And Disney just totally shows them being put into the furnace and the fire burning and fire flames around their faces and, you know, there's smoke of their ghostly, witchy spirits coming out of the chimney and then being sucked back in later. Like, they full on showed these witches burning. That's just a little shocking. It's a little violent. They also discuss the relationship between Billy, Winifred and Sarah, and they straight up say that Billy and Winifred were a couple, and that Winifred caught Billy and Sarah together and then punished Billy for it and not her sister. So now they're talking about like a whole backstabbing cheating scandal on a kid's show, on a kid's movie. Like, what? I mean, how does the kid even comprehend that like that was cheating? I mean, I don't know. Those are some things, especially with the bus driver. And Winifred says, "I desire children." And the bus driver's like, "Oh, it might take me a few tries, but hop in." What? Sir, this is a kid's movie. The same kid's movie where they explain what a virgin is. I mean, they don't directly explain it, but they say it 9 times throughout the film, which is, I think, the most ever said in a Disney movie. And it's constantly joked about, like, when he says, "Oh, do you want to light it?" And he's asking Allison, and Allison smirks and is like, "No, thank you." Probably indicating that she's not a virgin. And then the biker guy, just as a cop, is like, "Really? You're a virgin?" And he's like, "Dude, I'll get it tattooed on my forehead. Can you just help us out?" So the cop is kind of like making fun of him for being a virgin. And, you know, Thackeray Binks, even like one of the last things he said was, "I had to wait 300 years for a virgin to light a candle." Like, why was the virginity so important to mention? It could have just been some kid, could have just been some stupid kid. But no, they said virginity, which I personally don't take offense to. But it is just, you know, looking at it from a Disney movie perspective is a little thought-provoking for why they would make that so important to a storyline. And don't even get me started on Sarah Sanderson. Now, don't get me wrong. When I was little, like I said earlier, I wanted to be Sarah Sanderson so badly because she had this fun, bubbly, she was, you know, the most beautiful of the three of them, personality and looks and all that stuff. But now that I'm older and I watch it, I'm like, holy cow, she was horny. Like, she talked about always wanting to play with little boys and men and always on people's laps, like men's laps, and caught kissing that one guy before she sings, "I Put a Spell on You." And then she was like flirting with, you know, the quote, the devil. And the way she rides her broomstick is so suggestive and like sensual. And I get they're trying to lure in kids, but, you know, use some candy, not the candy that's on your body. And speaking of candy that's on your body, Danny straight up tells Allison to her face that that Max loves her yabos. What? And first of all, there was only like 24 hours, not even 24 hours, like 12 hours earlier is when Max and Allison seemingly meet for the first time. So how would he have had time to even talk about her yabos, especially in a room where Danny could hear? Because when he was talking about Allison being so soft and cuddly, he didn't say anything sexual about her. But then later on, Danny's like, "Oh, he loves your yabos." So it's just, there's a lot of little things in there that are added in that aren't necessarily necessary. But they occur, and, you know, as an adult, we really don't care. And the movie as a whole is fantastic. My job is to just tell you interesting things and point out some interesting tidbits and thought-provoking details about the movie, which is what I'm doing. And I say job loosely because this is only something I'm doing on my free time and as a hobby. However, if I'm going to be doing it, then I cannot finish the episode out without discussing Hocus Pocus 2. Unfortunately, we don't know too much about the greatly anticipated sequel, but I've done some research and some articles and some videos, and I'm going to let you know everything that I know so that we can all be on the same page. Hocus Pocus 2 has been announced by Disney Plus, so it is official, and it does seem like it will be a Disney Plus release, which is kind of unfortunate for those who don't have Disney Plus but still love the movie, the original, and want to see the sequel. I'm sure that you know someone or know someone who knows someone, and hopefully if it is going to be on Disney Plus, everyone will have a chance to watch it. It will be directed by Hairspray director Adam Shankman, and he actually mentioned that he's not going to start filming for Hocus Pocus until he finishes filming for Disenchanted, which is the Enchanted 2 sequel, which I'm very excited about because Enchanted is such a good movie. It's so iconic, and I would love to see a second one. So everyone keep an eye out for Disenchanted as well. And if you know any more information on Disenchanted, feel free to talk about it on social media and include me in it, or if you want to join our Facebook group and we could talk about it there, I'd love to know more about that as well. But for Hocus Pocus 2, for now, we're going to have to wait a little longer, and there is no direct announced date yet. What will Hocus Pocus 2 be about? Good question. Not entirely sure. It is going to be written by the Workaholics writer Jen D'Angelo, but nothing super official about the story yet. There is a sequel YA novel out already that talks about Max and Allison's future daughter 25 years later having to encounter the Sanderson sisters again. So that could possibly be what the sequel will be about. However, like I said, nothing's official and Disney can always take it in their own way. Now, the biggest question, which I'm sure you are all most wanting to hear the answer for, is who will be casted and will anyone be reprising their roles? Now, all three Sanderson sisters have publicly expressed that they would love to come back and reprise their roles. And some of the other cast members have also expressed their want to return. The problem is there's been no released casting, no official prospects or anything like that that would indicate the Sanderson sisters returning, nothing that indicates a new story without the Sanderson sisters. So there's really no answer, and I'm so sorry, and I wish I could give you an answer, but I looked up everything I could, and everywhere I saw, all it said was that they would love to come back, but nothing has been done on it yet. They've even said that they're just waiting for the call. Like, the moment they get the call, they're down to do it. So fingers crossed, and I hope that they do return as their roles. I hope that the sequel turns out just as good as the first, and I hope that we get one soon. That concludes my Hocus Pocus Halloween spooky special, guys. Thank you so much for joining, and I know that this episode was a little different, but I honestly had just had so much fun researching such a Halloween cult classic like Hocus Pocus, and I wanted to just talk to you guys about it from a different perspective because it is a pretty well-known movie, and I didn't want to bore you guys with the normal summary of a movie that most of you have already seen, a movie that is so well incorporated into the Halloween, vibe, that even if you haven't seen it, you probably already know about it. So, although I will cover well-known movies in the future and probably tackle it the same way I would a normal episode, the beauty of having a podcast and having a new podcast is being able to explore options in the way you do things. So today was a little different. I enjoyed making it. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. And I want to thank you all again for tuning in. So you can find me on Instagram at PopThatCornPodcast. You can find me on Twitter at PopThatCornPod. And there is a Facebook page, PopThatCornPodcast, and a Facebook group, PopThatCorn. So please go ahead and check all that out. I'd love for you to interact with me on social media. One of the things I want this to be is a movie discussion, not just with myself, but with you guys as well. And the way to do that is to get connected. So please follow me and subscribe wherever you listen. I'm pretty sure I'm available. I'm on Google Podcasts, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, a couple of other ones too. If you go to my link on any of my pages on social media, you can go ahead and figure out where I'm available, because I'm sure wherever you want to listen, I can be there. And if I'm not there, request it and I can get approved. And before I sign off, I do want to add in a little small change of things. I really gave myself a unreachable expectation. I wanted to make this a weekly podcast, and I started it out being a weekly podcast. It's only been 3 weeks and I'm already struggling, and that's on me. I have a 8:30 to 5 job Monday through Friday. I have to help out around the house. You know, I've got friends and family that I want to see and they want to see me. I've got hobbies that I do. Even the thought that I could have done this weekly is just, it's so ingrained in my personality. But this is now going to be a bi-weekly podcast, which will give me more time to find, watch a movie, record, and edit the episodes without stressing myself out. Because like I said, when I first started this, I want this to be a fun, relaxing, enjoyable thing for both me and you. And the way that I can do that is by making this a bi-weekly podcast. So thank you for sticking with me. And I hope you guys will tune in every other week now for a new movie. I will keep you guys updated the week before it's released to let you know which movie I'll be watching so that you have all the time to find it. And thank you guys so much. I hope you have a wonderful, spooktacular Halloween. And stay poppin'.
Bye.